Okay, let's see how good you're going to be. On Sunday, they dared me to do it. On Sunday, April 29th of last year, Russ preached a sermon. Does anybody know what it was? I slightly changed the question. He preached a traditional lesson on Acts chapter 10 dealing with the conversion of Cornelius. And if you're like the deacons, you did not remember. But most of you know that story anyway. So the title of tonight, here it is, Phyllis. This is the title. The Four Faces of Cornelius. And we're going to come back to that in a little while. We're going to look at the descriptions of Cornelius in this chapter. There are basically four of them from four different sources. And we're going to take a look at them. The first one, of course, comes in verse 1 and 2 that Andrew read. And it's Luke's description. And there's actually two different ones. Verse 1 is talking about Cornelius' background, which is going to kind of be important. And then verse 2 is going to deal with his religion. There was a certain man in Caesarea called Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian regiment, a devout man, one who feared God with all his household, who gave alms generously to the people and prayed to God always. Okay, the first verse, Caesarea, about 30 miles north of Joppa on the Mediterranean coast, was the capital of Judea under the Roman procurator, which at this time was Herod Agrippa. A centurion, which is what Cornelius was, would have been over a century, about 100 soldiers, which would have been part of a cohort of 600 soldiers. So he was a man of authority. Italian regiment. All soldiers would be native Italian, which is going to come into play in a minute. Cornelius' job was to protect the procurator, keep the peace by quelling any uprisings, and keeping the Jews in subjection to the Roman government. That was his job. All right. Verse 2 deals with his religious beliefs. Luke says he was devout, which is pious, devoted to religion, solemn attention to God, especially in prayer. Feared God. He was a Gentile that closely observed Judaism, but was not a full convert, as indicated by Acts 11, 1 through 3. Cornelius was probably a better Jew than a lot of the Jews of that era. Gave alms generously to the people. Remember, this is the people that he's supposed to hold in subjection to the Roman government. And prayed to God always. Now, before we go any further to the next description, just let's take a look at ourselves a minute. How many of us can meet these requirements right here? Devout, feared God, gave alms generously, prayed to God always. Remember, at this point in time, which Russ brought out in his lesson that you can't remember, Cornelius is not a Christian. In fact, all the descriptions we're going to talk about this morning, Cornelius is not a Christian yet. That doesn't happen to the very end of the chapter. But that's the description that Luke has of Cornelius right here. All right, then we get into verse 3 and 4, the second description. About the ninth hour of the day, he saw clearly in a vision an angel of God coming in and saying to him, Cornelius. And when he observed him, he was afraid and said, What is it, Lord? So he said to him, Your prayers and alms have come up for a memorial before God. And of course, you know, in verse 5 it goes on, the angel tells him to send to Joppa, ask for one Simon Peter, and he'll tell him what to do. Now, McGarvey in his commentary, I want to read what McGarvey says about Cornelius in these first few verses. That Cornelius was an Italian born and reared in a heathen land is almost certain by his Latin name, combined with the fact that he was an officer in an Italian cohort. How then could he have acquired the character which is ascribed to him No possible heathen education could have imparted it to him. It could be acquired only by contact with the Jewish people, which is the same people he's supposed to be holding in subjection to the Roman government. This man's got tremendous character. I wish I could live up to his character all the time. And of course, he's told to send to Joppa for Peter, and he sends two servants and a soldier that waits on him. And of course, Vine says a memorial is that which keeps alive the memory of someone or something. Your prayers and alms have come up for memorial before God. So that's God's description of Cornelius. Now they go to Peter. Peter's told to meet with them. Peter goes down and asks them, what do they want? In verse 22, they respond. And they said, Cornelius, a just man, one who fears God, has a good reputation among all the nation of the Jews. Remember, that's the people he's supposed to be holding in subjection to the Roman government. Was divinely instructed by a holy angel to summon you to his house and to hear words from you. So now we've got a description from servants and co-workers, fellow soldiers. And it's the same description we got from both Luke and from the angel from God. And of course, they lodge with Peter that night, and then they go to Caesarea the next morning. Vine says just, because they said that he was a just man. Vine says just denotes a righteous, a state of being right or right conduct, judged whether by divine standard or according to human standards of what is right. So he was a just man in dealing with the Jews that he was supposed to be holding in subjection. All right, then they arrive, and he asked Cornelius, why did you send for me? You sent for me, why? Now, this is Cornelius's description of himself. 4 days ago, I was fasting until this hour. At the ninth hour, I prayed in my house, and behold, a man stood before me in bright clothing and said, Cornelius, your prayer has been heard, and your alms are remembered in the sight of God. So that's four different descriptions of Cornelius from four different sources. And you should be able to see at this point that they're all the same. Even Cornelius' story reflects exactly what the others had said. So let's go back to the title I gave it, The Four Faces of Cornelius. How many faces did Cornelius really have? One. He was the same all the time. Regardless of who said it, he was the same all the time. Now the question for us is, and you have to answer for yourself, I cannot draw conclusions for you on this lesson tonight. You're going to have to draw your own before it's over. How many faces have we got? Do we meet Cornelius' standards? And remember, most of us are Christians. He's not even a Christian yet. And the standards are pretty hard to meet. So we will cover, and by the way, there's a good chance you're getting out on time or early tonight. But I've already been threatened about that anyway. Got a couple of questions. And I can't answer them for you. I can only answer them for me. Number one. How do you see your current relationship to Christ? Actually, Rush spoke on this some last Sunday when he dealt with ego and selflessness, and he talked about the modern society with our internet and our Facebook and everything that goes on. Human nature, what it is, we do not like seeing ourselves in a bad light, whatever it is. And we don't like other people seeing us in a bad light. Our ego and self-esteem can get in the way and give us an altered view of reality. For example, I'll deal with some of you men. How many times have you heard a man say that when he's in his 50s or 60s, I can do just about everything I did in my 20s and 30s? He's fooling himself. He can't do it. But that's human nature. Also, whether it's golf or fishing or cooking or driving, how often do we think we are actually better than we really are? It's human nature. We want to see ourselves as really good. And for most things, that's not a problem. But when you're talking about your relationship with Christ, that can be a problem. Now, Russ gets the blame for the next slide. His lesson last Sunday morning. I'd put it in, I'd taken it out, I'd put it in, I'd taken it out, and after his lesson, it had to go in. Because he could have used it. This is Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Dates back to 1943, before most of us were born. Notice second from the top is esteem. And remember, this came out way before there was internet, cell phones, selfies, and so on and so forth. Did humans even back then have a problem with self-esteem and ego? Absolutely. It's just with the internet and social media, it has gotten a whole lot worse. Just like he said last Sunday morning. But like I say, this chart dates back to 1943. Even then, Maslow said esteem and ego were close to the top. By the way, even though this is 1943, if you get into anything serious study dealing with human psychology of human behavior, management, supervision, and several other disciplines, you're going to end up seeing Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's there. So even though it's gotten worse, in my opinion, Russ's too, with the internet, Facebook, Twitter, it's always been a part of human nature. We want to think better of ourselves than we might be. And I guess before we leave this one, the question is, are we really the Christian that we think we are? I can only answer that for me. You have to answer it for yourself. All right, second question. How do your relatives, friends, and coworkers view your Christianity? Andrew touched on this a little in his lesson this morning. Basically, are you one way on Sunday and a different way during the week with family, friends, and coworkers? And we hear sermons on this all the time. But with the internet, selfies, which I hate that word, and Twitter and Facebook, is it a lot easier to fool people by putting out false information about yourself? It happens all the time. But how do your friends, relatives, and coworkers see your Christianity? Does it match up with what you think, or is it something totally different? Notice in Cornelius' case, they all matched up. Every description of Cornelius said the same thing. Last but not least, and actually it's the most important one, how does God see your relationship with Him? You can fool yourself. You can fool your friends, family, and coworkers. You can't fool Him. And the question is, do we match up to Cornelius? How would we stand up individually if we were compared with Cornelius? And remember, that was before he even became a Christian. Hopefully, it's a short lesson, but hopefully it gives you something to think about over this week. Are we really as good as we think we are? And of course, the follow-up question would be, are we as good as we should be? And most of us, and Andrew addressed some of that this morning, most of us could probably do a lot better. But this was a lesson that I saw real quick on Cornelius, the descriptions. If you take a look at the descriptions of Cornelius from all, it's the same description every time. I wish I could have that everybody that gave the description to me, it was the same every time. That's something we need to be striving for. If you have a need for the respond to the gospel invitation, why don't you come as we stand and sing?